Live from Houston, Texas, the humidity capital of the world, it's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, it's Monday. It means it's time to get up, get going, and get rocking. You know, it's amazing to me how literally tens of thousands of people struggle to create wealth in America, to make things happen. My next guest, Tom Carson Knowles, has written a book that to me is quite intriguing, and I was glad to get him on the show. Let me tell you a little about Tom. Tom Carson Knowles is an entrepreneur, blogger, and best-selling author. Tom has been an entrepreneur since the age of 13 when he started his first business out of his father's garage. Today, Tom teaches new and existing business owners how to succeed through using hot new marketing strategies such as social media, blogging, and digital publishing. Tom's recent book, 101 Ways to Start a Business for $1,000 or Less. That's why he's on the show today, guys. Tom Knowles, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Bert. I appreciate it.
You bet, you bet. Let me ask you this. Have you personally ever started a business with less than $1,000?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done that numerous times, and honestly, not all of them succeeded. Many of them failed. But I think that one of the big problems people have today when they talk about starting a business is that they think, you know, you've got to have a big manufacturing plant and make cars, or, you know, you've got to have this big consulting firm with hundreds of employees, or a restaurant with 20 or employees or so, then that's what a real business is. But
right.
In my opinion, a real business is just something where you create a product or a service that helps the customer solve their problem. So, for instance, let's say you have this show. This show is a business. I don't know how profitable it is or not. I have no idea how the show works. But, you know, there are people out there who are listening right now who want to learn how to start a business, how to be more successful in the business they already have. And that's a problem that people have. They need that knowledge. They need that information. And so you're simply providing a service to these people, and that's a business, you know, no matter how big or small. And that's why you don't need a lot of money to start a business, because you don't need a lot of money to start solving people's problems.
You know what? I love that idea, you know, because you're really – any business, whether big or small, is there to solve problems. And if you do a good job, then you'll – solve a lot of problems and, in theory, make a lot of sales. And if you're doing it correctly, you're going to make profit out of there. And people forget, you know, you look at companies like Apple, they started in a garage, and so did Microsoft. I'm not sure if he started in a garage. I believe he started at home. I'm pretty sure it was either home or in a garage. But bottom line, you know, there's just a lot of success stories that started with $1,000 or less, or just started in a garage. Now, let me ask you this. Is it, in your opinion, and I know that you've done some research, is it really true that someone can start a business and succeed with less than $1,000? And I guess you kind of answered that, but let me ask you this then. What do you think makes the difference between those companies that succeed and those that don't?
That's a great question. You know, I think it's all about the entrepreneur. It's the founder of the company. And, you know, it's you on the line. It's you listening. It's you, whoever, you know, wants to start a business. It's not about, you know, having the perfect product. You know, a lot of people think it's about, you know, oh, I've got this perfect new invention, and it's just, you know, it's like the better mousetrap syndrome, and you fall in love with your product, and you think it's the best thing in the world. But it doesn't matter how much you like your product. It matters how much your customers like your product. And so the most important thing, and the reason that some people fail and some people succeed in business, is that you learn along the way, because no one knows ahead of time whether some new invention is going to be bought by thousands and millions of people all over the world or not. The only way to know is to create something and then go out there and ask your customers, hey, do you like this? You know, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? You know, survey your customers, ask them questions, learn from them. And you have to learn along the way. No one knows, you know, ahead of time before you start a business, you know, what's going to work and what's not going to work. And, you know, there's all these big consulting firms out there, and they work with all the top Fortune 500 companies, and they don't even know if their suggestions are going to work or not. They're just like, hey, let's try this. Let's try that. Let's try this new marketing strategy. Let's try this new product. You know, you look at brands like Kellogg's, and they, you know, they come out with, like, dozens and dozens of new products and new cereals every year. and most of them fail. And you would think this multi-billion-dollar company with all this research and all the money they spend in marketing and advertising, that they would know which products are going to succeed and which are going to fail, but they have no idea. And so that's
right.
What you have to be able to do in business is you have to be able to try new things and fail, and you have to be okay with that failure. You have to just kind of let that failure roll over your shoulders and let it be a lesson for you to instruct you to do something different next time rather than what most people use failure as, which is an excuse to quit. You know, they'll tell their friends, oh, you know, I tried this new restaurant and people didn't like the food, so I'm just going to quit. And, you know,
right.
If people don't like what you're doing, all you have to do is learn from that and create something new, create a better product that people really like, and then keep trying from there.
Well, you know what, and the other flip side of that is sometimes an absolute failure can work in a different direction if you're open-minded to it. You know, Post-it notes was an absolute failure. The two scientists involved in making Post-it notes were actually looking for a way to make a super glue, if you will. They wanted the super adhesive, and they failed, and they came out with this little sticky adhesive that was just mildly sticky. And from there, they used it. The one guy who created Post-it notes, or who was the spearhead, was using this adhesive glue, this almost non-sticky adhesive, in his hymn books at his church choir. And from there, Post-it notes was created because they weren't, like you said, they weren't focused on the failure. They weren't making the failure personal. Because they weren't making it personal, they were able to look at this failure or take this supposed failure and use it in a different direction, and boom, you have this multi-billion-dollar business out of Post-it notes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's a great story.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Isn't the number one reason businesses fail is because of lack of capital?
Well, you know, that's what a lot of people say. If you look at the business talk shows on TV, or if you read the big business blogs, they'll say, you know, businesses fail because of lack of capital. But I don't think that's true at all. You know, I've seen so many businesses, you know, like you mentioned, Apple and Microsoft, just start in their home with no money, no capital, and they created something new, and they went out there and made a couple sales, and they got a little bit of money. And then, you know, before they knew it, there were so many people wanting what they had that it was so easy to find investors to give them capital. It's so easy to find a bank to give you capital. I mean, if you've got, think about it this way, Bert, if you've got a waiting list of 1,000 people to buy your product, or 10,000 people to buy your product, it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter if you can't even pay to manufacture those orders. As long as you're willing to do what it takes to go out there and find the investors or the bankers to give you the money to do that. So
Let me do this. Let me cut you off for just one second. Speaking of banker, I got to run a commercial to pay for our bills, and we're going to be right back. We're talking about succeeding and starting a business with less than $1,000 with Thomas Carson Knowles right after this quick commercial break.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. We're talking about if you can make a successful business if you can create a successful business with less than $1,000. And the question that Tom was answering right before we took this break is, is it a myth that most businesses fail because they have lack of capital? Tom's answer was, yeah, he thinks that's a myth. He thinks that if you have a good product, if you have a good business, that you can go out there and find investors. Right, Tom?
Absolutely. And so you know, the real reason I believe that most businesses fail is because of lack of marketing. You know, like if you've got the marketing down, if you know how to find customers, then you're going to have a business. It doesn't matter how much money you have. You know, you can find friends or family or bankers. And there's so many places out there, people out there who have money who want to invest in a great business and a great entrepreneur. And the problem is we just don't have enough people who really understand how to market themselves, how to market their products and services.
You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that you're right. Any business that people are in, they're really in the marketing business. I don't care whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a ditch digger, a car maker, even a best-selling author like yourself. You're only a best-selling author. You're only a good business if you know how to market yourself properly. And I think you hit the nail right on the head. Most people disregard marketing, don't know how to do it, don't understand it. And that is precisely why 80% of all businesses fail. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Let me ask you this. What do you think? I'm trying to figure out how to articulate this, and I guess what's the fix here? I mean, you know, we have 80% or 70% of businesses failing because they don't know how to market. What's your take? How can business owners listening in right now turn their businesses around?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. You know, I think the main thing is education. It's all about learning. And, you know, you've got to study marketing and study the management of your business as much as you study the technical aspects of it. You know, so many times, like you talk about, you know, attorneys or doctors or anyone who starts a business, you know, we're often really good at the technical part. Like if a doctor starts a small doctor's office, he's really good at being a doctor, but he
Right.
probably doesn't have the business skills to manage the office, to manage the business, to grow the business, to get more clients. And so I urge you, you know, no matter what kind of business you have, study the marketing and the business management side of it as much or more than the technical aspects of your business. I mean, yeah, you've got to be, you know, a great doctor. If you have a restaurant, you've got to have great food and great service, and that's just a given, right? But it's the
right.
marketing that's going to set you apart from the competition and help you grow that business and help you stay profitable so that you can keep your employees employed and you can keep the business running and flowing and growing.
I love it. Tom, we're out of time. I'd love to have you back and talk more about some of your strategies and some of your ideas. Guys, check out Tom's new book, 101 Ways to Start a Business for $1,000 or Less, available at Amazon.com. And Tom, what's your website?
Blogbusinessschool.com.
What is it?
Blogbusinessschool.com. It's where I teach people.
Blogbusinessschool.com. I love it. Blogbusinessschool.com. Tom, we'll have you back another time. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Okay. Thanks, Bert. Have a great day. I appreciate it.
You bet. Guys, we're going to rock and roll. We got to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Isabel Mercer Torcate. I hope I got that close, Isabel. Either way, we're going to be right back after this quick commercial break.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. We are rocking and rolling. Monday is a great day, isn't it? Hey, my next guest, Isabel Mercer Torcate, I believe, is a brand performance catalyst and one of North America's top small business influencers. She's a best-selling author, founder, and host of LeapTV.com, and the co-founder of LeapZone Strategies. Momentum Generator is Isabel's middle name. I love that. Momentum Generator is her middle name. Isabel, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. And what a great conversation you had with Thomas earlier. I was listening in. And tell you what, I am an example of building a seven-figure business with $500 initially, actually. So I 100% agree with him.
I love it. It's great to have a – you know, it's great to have you say that right after that segment. So that's wonderful. And tell me a little bit about yourself. First of all, last name is –
Oh, you know what? Mercier Turcotte. But you can drop the Turcotte. It's all good. Mercier. It's French.
Oui.
Oui, that's right. Can we do this whole thing in French, you think?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, that's good.
All right, so tell us a little bit about your background, and I love this momentum generator. Tell us how this came about.
Well, you know what? I think that I came out sooner than planned out of my mom's belly. So there you go. I'm always 10 steps ahead. This is truly what I do. I work with companies and small business owners and CEOs to really create, one, massive impact through generating momentum and getting things done, but not just getting things done, but helping companies really create outstanding brand experiences so that exactly what Thomas was saying earlier, right? It's a given that you have a good product, obviously. If not, then get out of business. But the rest of it around it, not getting stuck in the day-to-day tangibles, not reacting as much, and just planning so that you can build something outstanding. And I'm known to get people to, you know, I love to work with people who have massive ambition and who want to create great, fast results. And, you know, if you want to move an inch over 3 years, I'm not your gal. Now, if you want to move, you know, 1,700 inches in the next few months, then that is what juices me. That's why another name that I have is Jet Fuel. So Jet Fuel and Momentum Generator is truly in my DNA.
I love it. Well, let me ask you this. Where does your passion and expertise for helping entrepreneurs come from?
Well, I was raised in a family of entrepreneurs. My mom had a hairdresser salon, and from the time I was three, I was hanging out with her at the salon, seeing great service being performed every day. My dad was a radio and TV talk show host in advertising, and it was all about building a fantastic experience so that people come for more, regardless of price.
I love it.
Yeah, and truly, I mean, I've learned with the best, which my two parents were and still are. I mean, my dad has passed away, but my mom is outstanding at creating massive popularity through just good service and creating awesome experiences. And as I have a background in scenography, which is set design and special effects for theater and movies, and a background in design and how to take the intangible and how to make that visually tangible and appealing, and not only appealing, but on purpose, on par with aligning with the DNA of the person, the company, the product. And I think that, you know, one day I'm going to write a book that's going to be called Learnings, or 101 Learnings from Behind the Chair, because I learned a lot from you know, from working behind a hairdressing chair. And that's kind of where my passion lies or comes from. And I would say that as I grew, I lived in such exquisite brand experiences. And when I started experiencing the world, I thought, oh my Lord, this is devastating. There's a lot of good businesses out there that could be so much better. And now that I work with these businesses, some businesses are somewhat profitable, but I tell you, they're somewhat profitable with providing a crap experience. Imagine if they actually up the ante and raise the bar on creating something outstanding. I can only imagine the type of results that I would help them create and that they would create. And so initially it was by pure DNA. Then it went from pure, selfishness, because I thought, ay, 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 you know, these companies have to get with the program here.
Right.
That's kind of how it started.
Well, let me ask you. Okay, so if I was to say, you know, Isabel does this, what is your mission or brand promise?
Oh, perfect. My brand promise is I promise clarity, pivotal shifts, and momentum. And I do that with my eyes closed and my hand behind my back. Like, truly, this is what I create. And basically, you know, I'd say that I'm a no-nonsense gal helping passionate and committed entrepreneurs get clear on their brand to align their business, their team, their communications, and their dreams to better the world. So basically, I help people identify, develop, implement, and deliver on precisely that, their brand promise and their purpose. And my mission, which is a purpose, is, you know, I'll say it in non-Isabel lingo, it's to create spectacular experiences, impactful experiences, and to help others create that. But in Isabel lingo, I create holy shit moments. And that's
right,
what
so,
I
so,
help
so,
other people do. And you know what?
Now, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
With you know, have you found that a lot of owners and entrepreneurs really are unclear as to their purpose or their business, and that's what's holding them back? Do you find that a lot?
100%. And I've worked with major global brands, HSBC, IMAX. I've worked with massive brands and small local heroes. And I will tell you that what Thomas was saying earlier, he was saying, you know, people have great products, but they need to learn a lot more about how to market themselves. And the reason why people don't do that or don't have enough knowledge in doing that is because precisely what you just said. They're unclear about who they are, what they stand for, how they want to make life better, and what makes them unique, because that's what branding is. First of all, branding comes before marketing. Branding to me is figuring out what the word is, and marketing is about the tactics in which I will promote the word. Branding is like it's the conversation that people have about you when you're not in the room.
Right.
It's what people think, what people feel when they hear your company name or see your product. And if you ask anybody, you go to TELUS, you go to any company and ask the front line what their purpose, mission, and brand promise is, no one will know. They'll actually they'll spill out something that sounds kind of good or kind of sounds kind of formulated, but really they don't live it. It's not part of their DNA, and they don't know. And you would probably get five different answers from five different people.
At the same place.
At the same place.
Well,
and I know
right.
this because I assess this all the time.
Sure. No, and I agree with you. I think that a lot of people definitely suffer from that. You know, I think that most cultures most businesses, you know, don't clearly understand what they're about or what they're going to deliver. That's number one, just like you said. And then number two, marketing to them is looked at as a pain in the butt, right? It's something that they're going to do at the, you know, if I have to, absolutely, I guess I'll do some marketing and selling. And it's the reason why a lot of these companies crash. It's the reverse. You have to market and sell. I don't know. I think it's, what's this gentleman's name? Emerson, who made the famous quote, you know, if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. I don't know how that became so popular because it's so full of crap.
Yeah.
It's so untrue.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you this because we're short on time.
Oh, no.
If somebody wanted to find out more about you, where do they go?
They would go to leapzonestrategies.com.
LeapZoneStrategies.com.
LeapZoneStrategies.com and LeapTV.com, which is my online TV show about branding and marketing and how to be extraordinary to avoid elimination.
Oh, say that again.
What I do in LeapZone and LeapTV is all about helping you become and stay extraordinary so that you can avoid elimination.
I love it. Isabel Mercier. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, you're welcome. And I'd love to come back and chat some more about that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Guys, we are rocking and rolling. I love it. Just abundance of energy, great guests. And we're not going to stop there. My next guest coming up is Gail Kent. And Gail Kent is a PR expert, and we're going to be chatting with her right after this quick commercial break.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
This is so cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, this is nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. My next guest, Gail Kent. She's the president of The Buzz Factory, a boutique PR firm, boutique PR and marketing firm in Newport News, Virginia. She founded in 2006. She consults with a variety of for-profit and not-for-profit, as well as governmental clients, providing strategic communications, inbound marketing, traditional PR, and social media training, as well as she actually helps implement all of these things. Gail Kent, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, Bert. Thanks a lot.
Well, excellent. Hey, as a PR person, I'd like to dig into this and ask you this. How has the digital revolution affected the practice of public relations and the opportunities for business to get featured in the media?
Well, this is a good news, bad news sort of thing, as most things are. The bad news, let's get that out of the way first. The bad news is that, as most people are aware of, newspapers and magazines are just folding every day all across the country. And the ones that are remaining are reducing their size dramatically. And most people can see this in their own daily newspapers across the country. This makes the competition for space very, very tight to get into your local newspaper, for example. And the staffs themselves have shrunk dramatically.
Right.
I used to be a newspaper reporter myself, and the number of reporters that are on the news staffs are just very, very small compared to what they were 20 or 30 years ago. So they don't have the staff to cover the business stories or to do these enterprise stories, as we used to call them, the nice feature stories. So that's one thing. And it's even the same in broadcast news teams. They're getting much smaller. They're their resources are fewer and fewer. They're concentrating on news that is much less expensive to gather and quicker to process. And oftentimes that comes down to things like crime and weather. They don't have large teams to send out to cover even, you know, things like school board meetings and city council meetings and things that impact us on a local basis, for example, or to do nice in-depth features about businesses, which is what we would like to happen. So the bad news is it's much more difficult to get our stories covered that we would like to have covered. But the good news is, and this is really the reason for these things that are happening to the traditional media, the Internet has eliminated the gatekeeper. This means that every single business has the opportunity to go out and become publishers themselves, and they can go directly to the customer. They don't have to go through the newspaper, the TV station to get their message out. They can go directly to the customer. And every business needs to think of themselves as a publisher. If they are not online and creating content through their blog, their website, through social media, they are really missing the boat, because that's where the action is today.
Interesting. Okay, so what you're saying is, if I'm a small mom-and-pop shop, instead of trying to get some of my content on the TV or the radio or the newspaper, I should just produce my own content by having this online presence. Is that right?
Well, I'm not saying that you should completely forget about the traditional media, But I'm saying it should be way down on your list of priorities. Now, PR primarily is going to happen online, PR and marketing. It is such a revolution that your customer base is going to be online. If they're not now, they're going to be. But most of the time they are, unless they are part of a demographic, a special demographic, perhaps people over 65 or certain special demographics. But most people are online. And that is where I recommend most people spend their money, is getting their website up, spending time and energy and money, getting their website optimized, and creating content that is going to draw people to their website.
I love it. Okay, so let me ask you this. I'm looking at your experiences not only as a journalist but also as a PR person. Let me ask you, is sending a press release out to a mailing list still the best way to get on media?
That is fine for routine information such as promotions, internal promotions in your company, or meeting notices or awards. But generally, press releases perform very poorly for more significant news and feature ideas. If you want to, the more effective way to approach the media, I'm talking about the traditional media, would be to pitch ideas individually to targeted reporters rather than just blanketing the country with a press release and hoping that something happens, like throwing spaghetti on the wall, as we used to say. What you really want to do is say, now, who specifically would this story interest? And you want to find that reporter and say, I've got a great idea for you. You have written about this in the past, and I think that you would like this story. And you pitch that story idea to that reporter. And you will typically get much more, a much better reaction than if you just send out a blanket release. First of all, you want to tickle that reporter's interest and make them feel that this is for them, and have an ongoing conversation with that reporter. If the reporter feels like, well, everybody in the world's getting it, so, you know, why should I care? They're going to feel like, you know, it's just another story. But if you can pitch it to them and work with them, you're going to get much better results. Also,
you know what I like about that is that you're really talking about building a relationship with that reporter. You know, because that's really what it's all about. I mean, nothing happens without that relationship.
That's right. That's exactly right. And your story also is very important. It should not just be some self-serving story of how great you are. There needs to be an angle to it, a hook that is something unique beyond just your own self-interest. You should think about, you know, is there a human interest angle to this, or is something happening in my company that's indicative of a new trend, or, you know, are we getting ready to hire 1,000 people and that's going to affect the local economy? Think about how it's going to affect the publication or the news media's audience, and think of in terms of their audience, not yours. So what are they concerned about? They're concerned about their readers. So will it appeal to their readers, not is it something important to you?
Right. No, I love that. That's a great tip. I've seen so many press releases, so many people trying to push self-serving information that, you know, it's just hype. It's just crap. Hey, but let me ask you this. What about taking your own video and sending it to TV stations? Do you recommend this?
Some stations will actually take your video as long as it's in raw form. They don't want slickly produced video that you've gotten done by a production company. But if it's something that you have done, and sometimes, you know, just your phone video will be fine. But if it has not been produced and it's newsworthy of something that's happened, absolutely send it to them. Sometimes they will use it, and sometimes also newspapers will use it on their website. So don't think that, you know, you don't have anything valuable. send it to them and let them know what's going on, and quite often they will use it. So it's always useful to be on the ball and thinking ahead when something's going on, whether it's in your business or just something on the street. Absolutely, get that phone out and start videoing it. You never know what will happen.
I love it. I love it. All right, let's talk about this. At the Buzz Factory, your company, you guys offer inbound marketing service. Can you explain what that is and how this helps businesses?
Sure. Inbound marketing is sort of a new phrase that people are not used to hearing, but really it's just helping your customers find you online. And the way you do that is you make irresistible offers to people who need your expertise. And if you're in business, you are an expert at something. And
right.
Whatever you're an interest, you're an expert in, you take your online presence, which consists of your website, your blog, your social media activity, and you make it into a magnet for more traffic and get it capturing leads, and then as a result, turning those leads into business. And the way you do that is that you create products, information products, we'll call them, by writing e-books or offering free webinars or additional blog posts or some other kind of content, and you offer them up for free. And as you do this, you become a trusted expert, and people think, wow, this person's very helpful, and they're offering all this free information. And so when they sign up for these things, like a download my free ebook, then you obtain permission to send them more information about your company. And this process goes on and on until you're building a relationship with them in a step-by-step process. Eventually, then you're able to reach out to them and perhaps offer them a free consultation. And as you build that relationship, then they may decide, yes, let's do some business together. So this inbound process is a relationship building process, and then you want them to become your customers, and then as you delight them, they become your promoters. So the really nice thing about this is that leads developed through inbound marketing cost 61% less than leads that are generated through traditional marketing, or what we like to refer to as interruption marketing, which is you know, TV commercials or radio commercials or that sort of thing. It's the stuff you have to listen to in order to get the free, you know, music on the radio or the free TV shows. But really, when people are looking for information online, they're coming to you. You're not having to reach out and grab them or interrupt their TV shows or their radio music. They're coming to you.
Right. I love that because they're searching out for that content, that information anyway. If they find your information and they like it, and you, like you said, you start to build that relationship, and it just goes from there.
Exactly.
Let me ask you about this. Let's talk about social media. Do you think that there's a real value in social media for businesses?
I do. And many people, I think, have perhaps some older folks have resisted it, thinking, oh, it's a fad. You know, I don't need to tweet what I had for breakfast this morning. You know, but if you haven't gotten involved in social media, it's time. It's not going away. It can be a time waster if you don't have a strategy.
Right.
And it's not enough any longer just to show up there. You really need to work with somebody who understands the tools and can help you integrate it into your social media communications as an overall PR and marketing strategy, not just bolted on to your other activities. And that's another reason that inbound marketing works so well. It's integrated into the entire process.
You know, when I think of social media, at least one of the aspects of social media, I think of the old adage, you know, the best form of advertising is word of mouth. And today, that word of mouth has been, you know, connected or what do you call it, made stronger by social media, or social media is that new word of mouth, right? It's the evolution of the word of mouth, because if I have a great experience with the Buzz Factory or with Gail Kent, I can talk about it. Hey, my PR person, Gail Kent, just did this great thing for me. Check me out, blah, blah, blah. Or if they had a terrible experience, I just had the sandwich at XYZ Sandwich Place. It was horrible. Don't eat here, right?
That's right. And it's really word of mouth on steroids, because it can fly, for example, through the Twitterverse in no time, because people can follow, can retweet something to all of their followers, and it can go viral in no time. And that's another reason that people need to be on social media. Even if they decided they weren't going to participate themselves, they need to listen and hear what people are saying about their business. And they will. You have to know what people are saying about your business.
You know, I like what you said there. Whether or not they intended in participating in social media, guess what? Most likely, they're already talking about you. And you have to listen. You have to be aware, because, you know, one of the big things, at least in the restaurant industry, that I've seen just blow up is Yelp and these review sites in general. And, you know, it doesn't take very long for your name to if you're a restaurant, for you to experience a downtick in sales. Once one or two or three bad reviews go up, you know, you're starting to feel that effect.
That's right. And I've been shopping for hotel rooms in Key West, Florida, just in the past week. And when I look at reviews and I see one that says, oh, this place is dirty, that's the end of my consideration of that place.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Oh, let me ask you this. When and where should a business begin social media? I guess you've already answered the when, because the when is like right now. But where should they start? Should they start at Twitter? Should they start at Facebook, LinkedIn? Where should a business start their social media?
Well, most people think that that's a good place to start, but actually the most important place to start is with a blog. And people don't even think of blogs as being social media, but they are. They are the most basic, fundamental part of social media, of social media tools. A blog is part of your part of your website. And a blog is important because you own it. It's your territory. It's like your backyard of your website. And the reason why it's so important is that it increases your search engine optimization for your website. You own it. It's like getting people to come and play in your backyard rather than you going to somebody else's backyard, like in Facebook or Twitter or whatever. You're doing good things for their property, but you want to enhance your own property first. And when you blog at least once, preferably twice or more a week, that the Google search engines, spiders, come and crawl your site, and they bring free traffic to you. Free meaning you're not having to pay for it through keywords in an optimized campaign or any of those sorts of things. And
right, some kind of pay-per-click or something.
Right to your site. And so that's where you want to spend the majority of your time first. And then if you have time, then you can even take your blog post and post them on Facebook, post them on Twitter, and then draw that traffic right back to your site. So the majority of your time and your effort ought to be spent on your blog first. That's the fundamental place to start with your social media campaign.
I love that. What a great and simple strategy. Start right there on your blog and then expand from there. Gail Kent, excellent, excellent content, great strategies. Guys, if you need help with your social media, if you want to talk to Gail about social media or PR, marketing, check her out at The Buzz Factory. That's THEBUZZ, factory spelled FACTOREE.com, TheBuzzFactory.com. Gail Kent, thanks so much for sharing your time today.
Thank you, Bert.
All righty, guys. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back talking with Greg Justice. If you are unhealthy, it's illegal. I don't know. I was going to try to come up with something really funny about justice and fitness. Anyway, when we come back, fitness expert Greg Justice on Money for Lunch right after this quick commercial break.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. We're talking about health and fitness. We're going to talk about the mindful approach to exercise. You know what? It's probably illegal for you to be this out of shape. And Greg Justice, finally, I get to do the pun I wanted. Greg Justice is a best-selling author, speaker, and fitness entrepreneur. He is the founder of AYC Health and Fitness. Check him out at AYCFit.com and the corporate fitness system, Greg Justice. Welcome to Money for Lunch.
Is there any justice in this world? Yes, there is. Here I am. Thank you,
brother. That's it, man. I love it. All right. So let me dive into this because you're well known for having this phrase, the slogan, mindful approach to exercise. The question I have is, let's begin with that. What is your meaning with mindfulness?
Well, mindfulness really, you know, in a synopsis version of what mindfulness is, it's really simply about being aware of what's happening right now without wishing that it were any different. You know, it's about being able to enjoy the pleasant things without trying to hold on to them too long because, you know what, things are going to change. So don't worry about trying to hold on to the good things. And then also being able to deal with the unpleasant things without fearing that it's always going to be that way, because it won't. It's just about living and being in the moment, accepting the moment. That's kind of a synopsis version of what mindfulness is.
You know, it's funny you should bring that up, because one of my big goals in life is to exactly do it, you know, to enjoy every moment. You know, I think whether you have a happy moment or a sad moment or a challenging moment or whatever, you know, it's really the old adage, it's in the eye of the beholder, right?
Right, absolutely.
And so if we are in the moment, and let's say you have a flat tire, and you could experience that in a very negative way, or you can say to yourself, okay, you know, I'm going to have fun with this. You know, here's an adventure that I'm being given, and let's see where it goes to. Or you can have it ruin your entire day, right?
Exactly. And some people allow it to. I mean, you know, they're consumed with that negative moment, which then turns into a negative day, which then turns into perhaps a negative week. So it's just about being able to accept and understand that the journey is part of what's enjoyable. And, you know, in my industry, in the fitness industry, corporate wellness, fitness, personal training, all of that, we're so consumed with the end result. You know,
right.
There are so many 12-week challenges or, you know, the race to get fit. And the problem with that is, you know, that fitness is not a destination. Fitness is a journey. And if you can learn to embrace and enjoy your workouts and find something that you enjoy, then usually the results are going to take care of themselves. But too many people kind of get the cart before the horse and focus on just that 12-week result. And then once they've lost that 20 or 30 pounds in that 12 weeks, then all of a sudden they wake up to the realization that, uh-oh, now what do I do? You know, I've hit my goal, but they haven't built habits into their lifestyle that will allow them to maintain those goals. So they'll end up gaining that weight or even usually more weight because they haven't learned to change the habits, to embrace and enjoy the journey.
You know what? And what you're saying, I mean, to me, strikes a huge chord. I look at Obamacare and, you know, and I think about Obamacare. I think that President Obama, whether you agree or disagree with his politics, he was trying to do something good for America, that was his intent. And one of the things that I thought of immediately upon hearing about Obamacare was, you know, too bad that he's not putting an emphasis on getting people working out more, because the reality is working out prevents all sorts of disease, reduces blood pressure, reduces stress, makes people feel better. I mean, the list goes on, and it's not about getting the results. It's not about everybody walking around with 20-inch biceps and a six-pack. It's about, like you said, it's about that journey. Some of my best friends and some of my best experiences have come from the gym, and I'm in the gym like at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, guys, and so you start developing this this relationship with these people that you work out with, regardless of whether you're losing weight, gaining weight, whatever your goals are. People don't care. There's a certain, what do you call it, camaraderie when you're in there in the gym on a regular basis, and you start to develop this, and you get addicted to going to the gym, to working out, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, exactly. It's that camaraderie that builds accountability.
Yes.
And, you know, if there are a group of three or four of you that kind of get used to seeing each other in the gym on a regular basis at that certain time, when one of you all is missing, the others will usually call to check up on them. Hey, you know,
right.
We had a great workout today. Why weren't you here? And there's just that bit of accountability that is wonderful for keeping you on track. And those are incredible things. And, again, part of the journey.
I love it. All right, let's talk about mindfulness some more. What are the criteria for mindfulness?
Well, backing up before criteria, there are some guiding principles, and then built into those principles are attitudes. Then we build on to the criteria.
All right, well, let's talk about your guiding principles then.
Yeah. Again, there are 10, and anyone that would like a report on these, I will be happy to send them, and I'll give you the information at the end of the interview. But there are 10 guiding principles, and we'll kind of work our way through those, and you know, stop me if you want to dig into one of them, but I'll go through them somewhat quickly, and then, like I said, you can feel free to jump in if you want to dig into each one of them or a particular one. The first one is it's awareness. And, you know, we know that things happen around us every second of every hour of every day, and it's just about being aware of that particular time of the day, the minute, whatever, the hour. Just be aware of your circumstances, of your surroundings. We're so involved in the rat race of thinking six steps ahead that we can't live and appreciate the moment. The second one is acceptance. Like you were talking about having a flat tire. It's being able to accept your circumstances, good, bad, or otherwise. You've got to accept and, again, be in that moment and understand, good, bad, or otherwise, it's not going to always be that way. So accept exactly what is happening at that moment. The number three, now this one, the third one is compassion. And interestingly, we're very good about having compassion for others, for our family and our friends. But a lot of times we're horrible at having compassion for ourselves. You know, we don't display that same passion and forgive ourselves for doing stupid things like we would forgive a family member or one of our best friends. So we need
Let me ask you this. I want to hit on this point a little bit more.
Sure.
What's your take? Why do you think that we are so bad to ourselves so often? I mean, there's no way that we would talk to our children or to another loved one the way we talk to ourselves. Why do you think that is?
If I were a psychologist, I might be able to get into that more. I honestly can't figure it out, and I have to work on that myself as well, because, you know, we have high expectations for ourselves.
Right.
I'm an exercise physiologist. But again, that compassion is lacking. We always find and try to fault and count on our own deficiencies rather than focusing on our strengths. And if we can learn to forgive ourselves, okay, I screwed up. I shouldn't have done that. Okay, I accept that I did it. I own that moment, and I will learn from that. And there's another problem is if we continue to do the same stupid stuff over and over and over, you know, what have we learned? So we've got to be able to learn and grow from our mistakes as well. But accept that we screwed up. Forgive ourselves, not focus on our weaknesses or deficiencies, but rather on the positive components and move on. Like I said, learn from those stupid screw-ups that we have and then be able to move forward. But part of our, the large part of that is having compassion for yourself.
Right. You know what? And not to take up too much more time on this one point, but I do want to say this. If you're having the same problems over and over and over again, you may need some help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not talking about,
right.
you know, whatever, a therapist per se, but you know what, if you're struggling with weight gain,
right.
Or, you know, whatever, weight issues, then maybe you need somebody to step in and help you, a professional trainer. If you're having problems with money, maybe you need a professional to come in and help you get on a budget and fix those areas that are cropping up over and over again. All right, moving on. What's the next one?
The next one is invitation. It's an attitude of invitation. And it's just about being curious and open to opportunities, you know, and possibilities. Sometimes we restrict ourselves from progressing in our career or perhaps in the gym of lifting more weight or whatever it is because we are self-doubting. We have put a definite end to what we can achieve. And if we can just invite that openness and possibility into our existence, then we can achieve so much more than when we limit ourselves. So it's just an attitude of invitation to the possibilities.
Does that
make sense?
Oh, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I love that whole invitation philosophy. Next.
Yeah. All right. And then the fifth one is judgment or non-judgment, I should say. It's about, at the very moment, just dispelling all judgment. I mean, we're born. Every day of our lives, we make judgments about things, people, circumstances. That's just human nature. But when
right.
you're in a mindful, meditative setting, it's time to dispel all judgment, just to relax, observe, and take a load off. And you'll be amazed at how free you can be when you just dispel all of that judgment. So the fifth one is being able to be non-judgmental at the moment.
I love that. You know, what's interesting about this is you know, here you are, you're a fitness expert, but what we're talking about is really very spiritual.
No question about it. And meditation, mindfulness, you know, they all work together.
Right.
In our business, you know, we talk about the mind, the body, and the spirit coming together. And that really is what this the book, Mind Your Own Fitness, is all about, is bringing those three components together.
I love it. I love
it.
All right, we got about 2 minutes. We got about 2 minutes to go.
Okay, I'll whip through these the last five here. Number six
okay.
is patience. And, you know, basically that's self-explanatory, being able to be patient with things. Things happen quickly. We've got to kind of take a step back, be patient with ourselves and others. Number seven is practice. Nothing that you can't do anything and be good at it without practice. So it takes a consistent practice of mindfulness to get good at it. Number eight, and this perhaps is one of the absolute foundational things of mindfulness, it's about present moment focus. It's living and being in the moment. Number nine is tolerance. We've got to be able to tolerate unpleasantness and pain. We've got to be able to tolerate good things as well. It's tolerance. That's another attitude. And then the last one is validation. You've got to be able to validate your existence, where you are at that moment, what you're doing. Validation is so critical. Now I'm going to whip through these five criteria real quick. Number one is, you've got to be able to have a quiet mind. You know how we're always in a rat race, go, go, go. You've got to find time in the day. For me, it's early in the morning. 4 a.m. is my time. You've got to be, it can be any time of the day for any individual. It can be 2 in the afternoon. But you've got to find time that is just for you in an environment that you can allow yourself to have a quiet mind.
Hey,
number
Greg,
two,
actually, you know
yes.
what? We're going to have to stop you right there. We're literally
okay.
out of time. We're about to
I'm
hit
sorry.
Dead air. But the book is called Mind Your Fitness?
Mind Your Own Fitness, a mindful
Mind
approach
your own fitness.
To exercise, available on Amazon.com.
I love it. Greg Justice, thanks so much for sharing. Love your stuff.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Bert.
You bet. Guys, what a great show. Probably one of the best shows that we've had in a very, very long time. Check us out Monday through Fridays at moneyforlunch.com.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.